2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green, it's Monday the 29th of March.
Coming up on Game On tonight, we ask Owen Hand and Stephen Kelly what now for the Republic of Ireland.
Here's Gerson Rodriguez, and he scores! Gerson Rodriguez drills it in from outside the area. It's a disaster for Ireland. Ireland 0, Luxembourg 1.
PJ Botha and Dunners will agree that Leinster are by far the best province in Ireland.
Careful now.
Leinster now, again with possession, just about a foot short of the line. Reaching out with that one, CJ Standard leans in with the shoulder there, trying to prevent Leinster from getting over the line with that one. And Leinster now make no mistake on this occasion as they eventually get over for the try. CJ Standard was the man who held up initially, but it does look as if it is Jack Conan is the man who's got in for the try for Leinster.
And Declan Quigley looks back at a dramatic season opening Bahrain Grand Prix.
This is the second DRS zone. There's one more to come after this. Hamilton is quite comfortable, I think, with Verstappen this far behind. He starts this year going for a record-breaking 8th World Championship. He has been put under immense pressure by Max Verstappen and Red Bull here tonight. Sir Lewis Hamilton, as he is now, crosses the line and wins the Bahrain Grand Prix.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. We'd love to hear from you.
Game on 2FM.
That was my dog barking in the background for anybody that did hear it.
I was wondering, was that on the clip?
The
no.
The dog get to the Formula One.
That was Ivy out in the back hall. It must be somebody a half a mile away at the gate. She's that good. Wow. Our big boxer is ready for somebody.
Brilliant.
That's the first time that's happened.
Yeah, there you are now. Yeah. She's been as good as gold for the last 12 months, but obviously there's someone around this evening. But anyway, on a sporting front, guys, I'm not really sure. Was there too many highlights from the weekend, unless you're a Leinster fan?
Yeah, it was a tough weekend. For me, it was a tough weekend between the soccer and more so the rugby. It got off to a flying start, Ruby. France versus Scotland was an incredible game of rugby. They threw it around. They had no regard for the game. It was fabulous to watch just for a person with no real interest in, you know, emotional body.
No vested interest is what you mean.
That's exactly it. And then for France to win it the way they won it, 27-23. France just kicked the ball out, and we forget this is a young French team and a little bit inexperienced and those kind of moments. But look, in terms of the Six Nations, it's really stepped up again. I think Scotland have proven that they can back up performances. But then we'll be chatting to BJ both about the Munster-Leinster game. And full credit to Leinster, fantastic. 4 titles, 8 in total. I think an awful lot of people are taken away from their performance by the fact that Munster underperformed. But take nothing away from them. Full credit, Leinster were amazing. They deserve the win, and they totally... you know, you have to win finals, you know better than anyone. You have to go win them, and they look so hungry. Just looking at some of the players, look so, so hungry for success. And, you know, from an Irish point of view now, hopefully they can push it into Europe.
Well, a bit of luck. Actually, I thought it was fascinating reading this morning, Maria, I mean, speak to Declan Quigley about it as well, was reading about Sam Bennett yesterday in Belgium and what he put himself through and the torture of... You just forget how hard cycling is as a sport. And when you read about him eating too much, then the climb in the last 16 kilometres, getting sick a couple of times, then the lactic acid running into his legs, and from being right on their tails to getting beaten by 4 minutes in the last couple of kilometres, you just wonder, like, how does anybody think being a professional cyclist is a good idea?
It was horrendous as well, and he detailed it very well, actually, afterwards, just that feeling of almost being too full to being empty and not having that energy to try and push on. But it was grueling just watching him and hearing him speak about it afterwards. I actually don't know why you would put yourself through that.
Just one thing for me, the speed he was going as he vomited, like, even that's impressive. Like, when I get
imagine being behind him.
That's true too. Shows why you should try to get in front of Sam Bennett. But when I puke, Ruby, I want someone rubbing my back, not knocking out as many watts as he can on the bike, and it just knocked nothing out of him. But
you probably want someone holding your hair as well.
At the moment, I need it. Open up the hairdressers, please.
See, when Munster lose and the Republic of Ireland team play so terrible, that is why we end up speaking about how Dunners likes to puke on a Monday. So I think that
deflect
that soccer performance and also the rugby performance have an awful lot to blame for this. But I think what I found, obviously, the Republic of Ireland lost to Luxembourg, and what I found nearly the most difficult about it was that there was nowhere to go to talk to your friends about it. Mm. You were just sitting at home, and I think it did affect people in a big way. It was just so disappointing. There was just an awful lot to take away from it, and you're just sitting in your house, and you know, usually you'd be out after a match, you go meet friends, you chat, you'd have the post-mortem, and you couldn't do that. You just had
you're telling this age yourself, and Billy had a massive row over the match.
You just had to wallow in the frustration of it, and you're looking around and you're like, right, well, we've talked all this out now, and
I totally agree. You actually need to be around people where you can nearly get it out and vent it and get it
and
all
argue
away
a bit, and you know, kind of talk it all out really and see if you can come to a conclusion, because you haven't done that. All you're doing is kind of listening to people on the radio talking about it, yeah, reading other people's opinions on it, and you don't have those kind of water cooler conversations where you try and figure it all out. And you know, realistically, there is an awful lot to figure out, because it was a really massive defeat, and people are trying to make sense of it and figure out what it means for the future of Irish football and ultimately where Stephen Kenny fits into that. So the fact that we haven't been able to talk it all out, there's just so many questions to be answered. And lucky enough, we are joined by two people who might have the answers anyway, because one of them is a former Republic of Ireland manager and another is a former Republic of Ireland player, Owen Hand and Stephen Kelly. I'm going to go to you first, Stephen, because you were there. And just in the whole following on from trying to make sense of it, really, like up close and personal, like what was your analysis of it?
It was poor in the final third. I felt we kept possession well at times, which is what we've been trying to do and improve, but there was a real lack of quality. I mean, you feel like you're kind of letting them off the hook, or you're kind of saying something that's very obvious, but it was we were passing the ball off the pitch, people weren't showing for tactically as well. When we played that formation, which worked really well against Serbia to an extent, even though we lost the game, I felt that Brown was getting forward far too early because we were keeping possession for longer. We weren't counter-attacking, so he was basically joining the front two and just making it more congested and sending it arriving late on the play, and there were different things like that that I felt could have been addressed throughout the game, but they weren't. And then on top of it, we looked less energetic. And all over the pitch, as the game went on, the confidence was getting lower, and there was a sense of this is not going right for us, and we could lose here. And you know, in the end, it was just a really, really poor result. And it, you know, for Irish football, it was up there.
Oh, and you were a former manager, so you know what it's like to try and manage situations that are difficult and challenging. And after the game, there was a lot of focus on Shane Coleman, and he was very critical about the players not looking for the ball in the game. When you're in a situation in a setup, how do you manage the fallout from that?
What do you mean?
When the captain is so critical about the players not looking for the ball, like what's the management around that?
Well, I mean, it's very accurate what he was trying to say to get across, because it was a very awkward interview to do for the captain, like afterwards, and I thought he was very honest about it, you know, and saying he's embarrassed was the big word. And the player's not looking for us. I mean, that's the problem that has to be addressed, and the big question about why. Now, you can give a lot of reasons, you know, about playing the two games so quick and the travel and all that. But, I mean, the same could apply to the opposition, you could say. So, you've played the game, like when you're playing in games, and just all you want is one player, a fear of getting the ball. You know, so all you got to do is just take a false position. Don't run that extra 5 yards to do it. And that kind of set in. It's hard to say exactly where, but as a general thing, it's a kind of a cancer that you're looking at it and you're saying, well, what is going wrong? It looks like there's fitness levels not involved. It looks like there's, you know, the heart isn't in the game. It's very hard to pinpoint the reasons why. I mean, you've got to go back. As far as I'm concerned, you've got to go back and address the whole thing, and since Stephen's started his the whole managerial job, and say, well, you know, has it been done properly? And I think he, in fact, has admitted, although in a roundabout way, that he did change the system. You know, the thing about it, I'm kind of keep on repeating, was you don't have players to suit a system. You have a system to suit the players that you've got. It's a very, very basic philosophy, if you like. I mean, you don't make omelets without eggs. So if you don't have, you must have your team playing in a system comfortable doing a regular basis with their. So Stephen came in with this evolutionary kind of thing about statement that we're going to be playing a totally different, you know, sort of an enjoyable evolutionary style. Sorry, that is trying to build from the top down. You don't do that with anything. You build from the bottom up. And that's, I think, where the problem started with Stephen. He did kind of mitigate a bit by saying that, you know, players played a bit more like what we're used to in the last two games. Now, some persuaded him to do that or whatever, I don't know. But the thing goes back, going a bit more, but it goes back to say the problems, some of the questions that weren't answered. Like, for instance, you know, the player, half leaving at the time after the video thing about England and all that, disastrous. And also players pulling out, like, I mean, McGoldrick, who is top player for us, family reasons. And, you know, some of the other things that are, you know, Damien Duff and Kelly, the goalkeeper coach, you know, supposedly a bit of a row and a falling out there. They weren't all that. They weren't answered. Well, they were all problems, because at the end of the day, if it's not a happy camp, that's the results and the performances you will get.
Stephen, you can take what Owen is saying on board and look into all those different issues and problems, but when you put 11 players on the pitch against what would appear to have been inferior opposition, surely between the 11 of them, they can concoct a way of winning the match.
Yeah, it is. So, like, that's right. The book is going to stop with the manager and what his failures have been and the way we played or whatever it's going to be, but there is an absolute responsibility as a player when you go on the pitch, and none more so than when you're playing for Ireland, you're representing your country, you're playing what should be the peak and the highest level for you. And Seamus said it, he did it, he come out, he didn't shirk it, he said the responsibility was on us, we can't blame anybody else for that performance, it was down to us not playing to our best, not doing what we need to do, people not looking for the ball. And that's what it is, you, at times in a game like that you need to think, does it, we have to change how this is going, and you have to do it within yourselves. It can't always be on the manager, and it's going to go back to him, but sometimes something has to happen on the pitch. And Seamus, at times you could see he was trying to change, he was trying to step into midfield, he was trying to get in the ball, trying to get a bit of oomph into the performance, but it just never came. And the longer the game went on, the more and more it looked like we're going to draw this game, and then at points it's like we're going to lose this game, and we end up losing, and it was terrible.
But Owen, even picking up with something Stephen said there, like with Seamus Coleman stepping into midfield, and I'm only a fan looking in, if you're going to try and play expansive football or a passing game, you need proper midfielders, real strong players in the middle. That's just a fan looking in. Do we have those players?
Well, I mean, that's obviously, I mean, we don't, is the answer to that question. Okay. I think Stephen Kenny, that is, has made, you know, some very big mistakes from the start. I mean, for a starter, leaving Seamus Coleman out, and then asking players like Duffy to play in a football way, like, I mean, that's not his style at all. So if you're asking players to do something and you're leaving out what has seemed to be Everton captain, you know, so there is that kind of worry that it's not a happy camp, you know, so it's difficult to put your finger on and say, okay, fine, you need strong characters in the team. Well, I don't think we have that. We have it with Seamus Coleman, and it's kind of, as you say, desperation of him stepping into midfield, trying to get a buzz going. But you need that midfield general. You know, you had it with going back to John Giles, Tim Brady. There was always that Grealish and all these fellas that Stephen would know playing it over there in England. There's always that character that actually, when they're going, it gets tough. As Roy Keane's famous saying, and the tough get going. You know, we don't have that character. And okay, you can say different excuses for that, but something that it's gone on for too long.
Owen, do you think he was right to try, though? Because the Irish people were calling out for a different brand of football. We weren't qualifying for many tournaments. People were getting fed up with watching the same thing over and over again, the same style of football, and wanted a change. And Stephen tried to answer that. It hasn't worked out, but at least he did try.
Well, yeah, I mean, fine, but that's what he's got to adjust. Like, it's getting back down again, like the system to suit the players or players to suit the system. It's what you've got. So you've got to put the 11 that you think are going to do the job. I mean, after all, I take your point, Marie, about Stephen, new style of football and all that. But the bottom line, the man in charge of that team, its results are all that matter. And if you can get the qualification, that's it. There are so many spin-offs from that, positive things that can happen from that. But you can never lose sight of the fact that the result is the most important thing, and how do you go about getting that result, i.e. a win against home against the Luxembourgs. Well, it's a deeper problem, to be quite honest with you. It goes back to the whole tuition for our younger players and our elite players. And we're talking now about a national academy. But that's another discussion type of thing. If you want to start an evolution style of football, you've got to start very, very young and get players used to doing it. I mean, that's what should have happened back in 2005. I was involved with it, actually. And I know it went on, but it didn't. That's another story.
Stephen, I know you are starting on your coaching journey and eventually might end up in the underage ranks and building your way up there. Do you think it's being done now? Is Rue Doctor doing the right thing? Are the coaches in tune with each other and starting to develop a way of playing?
There's definitely, so when you go into the FAI now and do your coach advisor system, there's definitely a system and a style that they're trying to implement into the coaches. So all the coaches that are currently going in and do their badges now are being taught a way of playing football, which is the way everybody wants to see the game played, which is passing out from the back, being expansive, keeping the ball, moving forward through the lines, which is great. And it's everybody looks to Guardiola and Barcelona and all these teams and how they play football, and it's wonderful to watch, and it's great when it's played to the highest level. But these teams always had the best players to perform at those levels as well. And Ireland at the moment, we don't have that pool of players to pick from. So it's just about getting the style that, like I said, Owen said, suits us. And I don't think, I don't point to the fact that we can play football, because we can. None of these players that are currently playing for Ireland play at clubs that literally get the ball in the back and smash it at a front man and run after it. They don't do that. No football is played like that anymore. And I don't think Ireland can play like that. I don't think we will. But there has to be a fine line. And the team that I look at the most and think that the example of how to play football, be direct with quality at Liverpool, is your team, Marie. And I know it's Liverpool and they've not had a great season and knock on that, but the way they play football, they miss out players, they play long, but it's with accuracy, they play direct to break lines, but then also then when they do play forward, it creates an opportunity to play midfield. And I think that's something we have to look to do. We can't just be always trying to go through the middle of the park, because at times we avoid pressure on ourselves, and against better opposition you'll get punished. We got punished against Luxembourg and they shouldn't be better opposition, and that was from an amazing piece of skill from Rodriguez. But for us going forward, we have to be looking in to find a style of play that suits everybody to the team. We can definitely keep the ball and spell and pass it and look to move forward, but we also have to play direct at times. And I don't, it's not hoofing it, it's direct with a purpose and with accuracy.
Yeah, Owen, just on that point, do we have to stay patient with Stephen Kenny? We can tweak systems, but what he wants, the philosophy of play for your underage players, which he has proven he's great with, will come. We just need to be patient.
Well, look, I mean, that's for other people to make that decision. But, I mean, he must change his philosophy. I think he did all through it, there's no doubt about it, from when he went into the job first a year ago. And he has looked at it a slightly different way than his bold statement at the very start. So, I mean, he has to realise that, hold on a second, there's a way to go about getting results for this and getting the best players available. You know, I do think that, you know, Stephen is saying there about, the different academies. Look, I mean, say, take Luxembourg as an example. And all these countries, they've all looked at the way that they can improve their game. Luxembourg was a great example. 10, 12 years ago, they did it. And they got all their players, their better players together. And then, okay, fine, they're all playing outside Luxembourg where they can get the good... that's something that we should be doing. And that's, say, something that you would get the elite players from all the League of Ireland clubs, because League of Ireland clubs are going their own way, which they can't afford to. In National Academy, you have the top elite players under the top elite coaches. and then you have this style of football, and then they go back to their clubs, their Shamrock Rovers, their this and their that, and then their knowledge is passed on. Well, so I mean, that's building from the bottom up, and that's where I think the root problem is.
But Owen, who's going to fund that? The FAI haven't exactly got much money in their coffers to fund this elite academy.
Well, I tell you, I mean, if you, I dread to think, well, what's the wages out? What's there now? If you're going through the whole lot of, you're going through root doctor and whatever. I mean, I don't think an academy would, and especially, I mean, something like an academy, you'd surely get, because the principals are so good, that sponsors would be dying to get on board to help all that situation. So I don't think the finance would be a problem relative to what's been the outlay now for what is very, shall we say, we don't know what the staff have got responsibilities for. We don't know what went on when Damien Duff left. We don't know what his responsibility is as such. It's very vague.
You'd have to hope anyway that now that there is change within the FAI and there does seem to be a bit more of a vision there, that in time these things will start to sort themselves out, albeit too late, and it would be great if it had been done back in 2005 or before that. But I think the conversations, there have been so many of them now, and Stephen, as you said, they are trying inside to get a message across through all the teams to try and bring it forward, that it's a you'd hope that would be moving in the right direction. But just on Stephen Kenny, Stephen, if he does move away from the philosophy that he has been so determined to bring to this Republic of Ireland team, what effect will it have on a group of players if a manager almost leaves behind his beliefs?
It depends on what the result of the pitch is. So if a the best example is Jose Mourinho, right? If Jose Mourinho goes into a club and he wins, and it's not happening at Tottenham, but every team he's gone and he's won trophies, the style of play he plays might not be the most enjoyable, but those players will do it because they know at the end of the day they're going to get a trophy with it. So you buy into that because of the success it's going to breed. If Stephen Kenny picks a team and puts them out and plays a certain way and they get results from it, no one will complain about that. As a player, you're built around wanting to succeed and have wins. That's what drives you in football. Everything else is part of it, but you're driven by trying to be the most successful you possibly can. And if you have a manager that when he puts a team out, you play a certain way, you get success from it, you absolutely buy into it. So if he changes, tweaks his style, I know people might say, oh, we question, he changed his philosophy. Well, sometimes that's a manager that's been able to adjust because of what he's been given or the situation he's put in, and able to still find a way to win. At the moment, not finding a way to win is more, you know, it's more harm on him than what his style is. It's the fact he's not winning, and that's when players will start to worry, is what we're doing right? Is what we're doing going to get success? Because the longer that goes on, that's when it's going to breed players feeling this might not be the man for the job and make questioning him an issue.
Owen, when you just look at the 11 players that he put out against Luxembourg and include maybe a couple on the bench as well, if he had changed this philosophy that we're all so caught up in and changed the way he was playing, do you think that he would have had a good enough team to beat Luxembourg?
Well, anyway, I think yes is the answer to that. I think it's there is something that's not right in terms of players not being comfortable going out representing their country there against Luxembourg. The longer the game went on, Luxembourg, that second half, they looked like they were the home side, you know. So I think that's the way it is, type of thing. It's just that when Stephen there is saying about the manager changing his philosophy and things, oh, it's right, he's talking about players. Players buy into success, you know. They want to win. I doubt very much those lads that are over now and whatever it is, hungry. I bet you there isn't a player that wants to be there. You know, I believe the atmosphere in the camp is not good.
I don't know about that either. You know, we did hear Seamus Coleman come out, and you could see him in the interview how annoyed he was about the Luxembourg game. And we've seen players come out since then and talking about how much respect and enjoyment they're having under Stephen Kenny. I know it's difficult when they're not winning matches, but Stephen, a lot of them are really young as well. Seven members are 22 years of age or younger, so there's a huge amount of inexperience there.
Oh, absolutely. And it's another thing as well. We're here to talk about it and analyse that game and criticise it and give her tuppence worth of what we felt went wrong. But we have to be very careful because these are young players, like fledglings in the start of their international career. And we're hopeful that these are going to take the nation forward and be influential in how we play football and us actually qualify for tournaments going forward. You know, and the amount of caps that was on the pitch in the midfield and then the goalkeeper included in that, well, you know, it's unbelievable how little there was. So we have to be careful about being overcritical of the performances and overcritical of what we think, because they've been thrust into a situation that is probably slightly advanced of where they would have expected to be. Everybody wants to play for Ireland. Everybody, that's your goal. You're in it. You're a young player coming through. You want to get to the highest levels, and it's a huge, huge triumph to achieve that. But they're still early on in their career. They still wouldn't have much game time, even in football living in a senior level in their clubs. So to come into Ireland and be expecting them to be performing really high. Luxembourg was it. The only thing with Luxembourg is that was a chance to beat a team that we should have been better for, regardless of the age of our players. And that's where it's hard on those guys. But, you know, for such a young group of players coming through, and we have to try and encourage them as much as we can and try and get behind them, and it's just important that we don't dent their spirits too much and don't have them not want to play for Ireland. You want them to come up and turn up and be proud of putting on a green jersey.
Look, the reality is the Luxembourg game can't be changed. It's history. So what do they do against Qatar?
Go and win. Seriously, get that win. And this is the situation. Before I was saying we get the win by doing what we're doing. And against Serbia, we did create chances. We broke the lines well. And we looked for a lot of the game. It was very positive. But we didn't have the lion's share of possession. I think that might have affected. That's what's affected. And that's always been the case for Ireland teams. When we're the ones that have all the ball and we're passing around, we look devoid of ideas and creativity in the final tour. And that's the issue. But we have to get the ball forward, get into those final tours, not be afraid to play into areas across it and play quick with the ball, because by being pedestrian like we were against Luxembourg, we lost that game. And you know, if we can somehow get a win over the line, it's not going to do anything, because again, it's a nothing game in the sense of it's not going to achieve anything, but it'll achieve a little bit of mentality for those players.
I think so, definitely. And they'll also have to do it on without Matt Doherty and Enda Stevens, who are out injured.
Sorry, can I come in?
Yeah, go for it.
No. Just say what Stephen is saying there. I mean, I don't think the criticism has been levelled at the players. You know, I don't think anybody is saying, "Oh, he was awful. He was desperate." It was the general thing. It was the general to say that the energy levels, the whole thing about it, and it's back to management. That it definitely is.
Well, I think there's a lot of people as well saying that we just don't have the players, or that our players aren't good enough. And, you know, there is, I think, some criticism falling on the players as well. There's obviously a lot on Stephen Kenny, and for many different reasons, and his philosophy being one. But we've had a text in, and we've actually had a couple of texts in pointing out that a League of Ireland manager isn't at the level for international football. What do you think?
Well, that is a disadvantage. Stephen has been very successful at League of Ireland level. And it is a disadvantage, the fact that he never played the game at any great level. Players want to respect a manager, and a lot of that respect sometimes can be the manager's excellent player. But that's necessary. If that's just a disadvantage, there's lots of very, very good managers who didn't play at high level. But the League of Ireland, fine. I think Stephen did find a problem. The only one he had the problems with must be Shannon Rose. And then, of course, when he went to Scotland. So he was thinking, look, he hasn't been at the top level, managing at the top level. And that does not help, especially when results aren't so bad for 10 games. You know, definitely huge disadvantage.
Stephen, I know that he isn't, you know, he's not a player that played at a huge level, and I think everybody always goes back to the Jose Mourinho. He did have huge success with Dundalk, and I think now when you look at the players as well that we have in the Republic of Ireland squad, it's a little bit different maybe to years ago when they're all playing at the top level of the Premier League. We have people playing in Championship, we have people playing in the League of Ireland, we have people playing with Anderlecht. It's not like they're all coming in from being under these managers that are out winning Champions Leagues every week.
Yeah, you know, that's been the huge change, and that's the bigger question, isn't it? Why has football changed so much over the years? Like, when I came into the team at Ireland, I made my debut at Tottenham in 2003, and I didn't get a single cap for Ireland while I was playing for Tottenham in the Premier League. And that just goes, at the time, we had three or four of the best right backs in the country, in the UK at the time, getting in the Premier League team of the year week in, week out. And that just was the strength of our squad. It was unbelievable, the difference. Whereas now, to get a cap, you know, the levels have dropped, and that's nothing to do with the players. All these guys are playing the best of their ability and at the highest level they possibly can. But it's the general senses of Irish football that it's dropped down the pecking order, and there's so many different factors into that, you know, the Premier League is so global and they're bringing in foreign players all the time, so Irish players probably don't get the chance. And then just what's happening in Ireland in the sense of producing players, are we just going through a period where there's not as many coming through, or is there a reason for that? And it's so hard to pinpoint that, but that's what the reality is, what we have to deal with. So Stephen Kenny is currently in a job with a group of players that wouldn't have been at the levels they've been at over the last few years, and he doesn't have that pool of players to pick from. It makes his job even harder, and it's even harder that he's trying to implement a style that's never been tried before either. So, you know, it's a double whammy for him. But for me, it's just about getting the best out of what we have, but the best out of what we have should be able to beat Luxembourg, and that's what the issue is. So going forward, the problem with Stephen is just get that win, get yourself some breathing space, and then we can talk about the fundamentals and how he's going to move on.
Okay, well, some very good points made by both yourself, Stephen Kelly, and Owen Hand. Thanks so much for joining us. I think we'll all be looking at the Qatar game tomorrow with a lot of interest. We're going to take a very quick break. Welcome back. A lot of reaction to that chat with Owen Hand and Stephen Kelly. And no surprise, really. I think the Republic of Ireland football team does raise a lot of emotion in people.
I love Stephen Kelly's last comment, that when he started with Spurs, yeah, took him so long to get a cap for Ireland, such was the quality of the team. And I think that answers or says an awful lot more than just a one-line comment.
But Marie, it's your point as well about so many young players, and it's great to want them to get experience and hope that they'll get it somewhere, but you need to go out and you need to play, and you actually need the losses. You need to know what it's like to underperform and not get the results you want.
One of the most famous lines in football: you'll win nothing with kids.
I think this is a little bit different though, because you're going out playing for your country. It's something that you will have dreamed about for your whole life. There's a huge pressure situation on you, and those games are so rare. You know, they're not coming week in, week out. We saw how difficult Mark Travers found it in the first game against Serbia, and then Gavin Bisogno came out and 19 years of age, and he was absolutely fantastic. One of the real highlights of the game, and the way that he was able to, I guess, almost show that leadership from the back. And it was only a couple of years ago that he was a shock starter for Shamrock Rovers, and look how far he's come. But that's, you know, that's the reality. Like, you know, we don't have goalkeepers who are fit at the moment, and we have to use people that you wouldn't really be expecting to start. But look.
Yeah, it's a wider chat. One thing though I did find interesting that Owen said, and an awful lot has been made about the system, but I honestly feel when you're playing at international level, all the players should be capable of playing whatever system's put in front of them. I know we're chatting about inexperienced players, but I know you can't cross codes. But, you know, under Eddie O'Sullivan, if we played England, we played wide. If we played against Wales, it was a much tighter game plan. And you just, that's the role of a coach, to come up, like Owen was saying there, with a game plan that will get you the result on a Saturday, not...
I'd be all for giving the kids a go. I'd be all for it. Like, my line was, you can't win it. My kids was what they all said to Alex Ferguson. Yeah. Now, I know they were superstars he brought in, but I would be all for it, because people who haven't...
been the best players in the world for about 10 years there, the Ryan Giggses and...
The point is, people who haven't lost have no fear. And younger people in sport have no fear.
Yeah, but you see, the difference is that a lot of these players aren't playing as well. So he was down so many players. He only had them for a couple of days, trying to get them to learn a system when you don't have any time with them. Dunners, when you were in rugby camp, you did get to go and spend a bit of time together and you had camps and all the rest.
That's true.
Just think this is, there's an awful lot of outside factors, things that have been completely beyond his control. You had COVID, you have not been able to have access to the players. You've all these people, you know, that were probably in the systems that he was designing not being there, so it's been difficult. Anyway, let's move on to the rugby.
Yeah, absolutely. Leinster are 4-4 as Pro 14 champion. It was a far more comprehensive victory than the 16-6 scoreline over Munster on Saturday. Leo Cullen's troop march into European battle on the back of their 8th title with Toulon this Friday, which you can watch live here, or which you can listen to live on Game On. We'll be covering all that match. To look back at a one-sided final, we're delighted to be joined by World Cup winner BJ both. BJ, how things?
That is all good. It's always a pleasure to be a high day, Marie.
We're all great. We've Ruby here as well. We won't ask you about formations and Stephen Kenny's setup, but just looking back at Saturday's Pro 14 final, it was one-sided, but Leinster blew Munster away.
Yeah, unfortunately, I suppose, in one part to start the game like they did, you know, it was just pressure from the start, you know. I think we saw that kind of the intention shown at the RDS, and you know, one thing I've always remembered playing there, and know the teams that go there, you know, you need to have a good start, especially in a playoff game, you know, and that's what they didn't get, and it felt like they were just suffocating them from the get-go, and that grip just got tighter and tighter, even though it wasn't a high-scoring game, as we saw. I think there are a few tries missed by a few errors that they did make. I think two balls actually went out on the side, and there were numbers up. So, look, it was definitely a one-sided affair, as you say.
BJ, one of the stats everyone calls on when it's quite one-sided is territory and possession, but these are quite staggering figures. Leinster had 71% of territory and something like 64% possession, but it was what they did with it, how they looked after the ball, the respect to put it in the right areas, that was just so much different.
Yeah, that was quite incredible stats, and we just saw that, I suppose, in the way Leinster suffocated them. So when Munster tried to get out their half or even their 22, I think, you know, the exits weren't on target. They either gave the ball back, you know, with around about the halfway line in open play, and we know what Leinster can do with that ball, and they just then built that pressure from then on, you know. So it felt like, really, Munster didn't really fire a shot, you know. They couldn't get into that 22. They did build up a little bit of pressure. We did see that. We did see a few penalties, and obviously we did. Munster slotted them, but they could never get into that space, you know, to really grind out their pressure, which obviously showed in the stats.
Donners, I'll give you a different stat, and you can answer for me. Which player, when wearing 1-15 in red, would have got the same jersey in blue?
Who? Yeah, it's a good question. It really is. And I think when you look especially at the front row, where that's the battle for Irish jerseys, you would think the guys being held out would show the hunger, the drive to rip the jerseys off their backs. If you look at, you know, Porter, Kelleher and Healy, they're all representing us in green. But as I said at the top, they looked the hungrier guys. They really did. I do think Gavin Coombs for me was impressive, but I think it says an awful lot when one of your younger guys, your young academy lads, is one of your guys that fronts up and looks like that he had the desire and want to get the job done.
Donica, there was so much in the lead up to this game about how Munster were looking on paper when they measured up against Leinster, and it didn't look too bad. It did feel like they weren't a million miles away from each other. Both provinces had really good players in the Six Nations, and Leinster's obviously transitioned better into this game. But is it a mentality thing? Do the Munster players not believe that they can go out and beat Leinster?
I think it must be now at this point, Marie. I really do. Like you last week, all last week, I was getting the buzz, and BJ, I'd be interested in your take on this. I was excited about the game, but it was built on nothing. You know, the last five games, we'd nothing to, you know, we'd no point of reference, bar maybe the past, which really doesn't matter anymore. And I'll give you a bit of a giggle, but I was reading a book to Robin the other night, The Emperor's New Clothes, and I was there, that was us on Saturday. You know, we thought we were fully togged out and ready to go, and we got to the RDS on Saturday and we were naked and we'd no firepower, we'd nothing to us, and it was disappointing, I must say. And I'm quite conscious of it, because you don't want to take away from the Leinster performance, But it was really, really disappointing for Munster.
Donnie, do you not feel... Sorry, just one thing. Do you feel that these Munster players can beat Leinster? If you were to put them out again in a few weeks, haven't learned, is there any way that this group of Munster players can beat Leinster, or should they just forget about it?
But there is teams, and look, I'll be honest, Leicester were a team for us. It comes a point where there comes a point where you have to take the scalp, and you really do have to step up. But for me, I would believe that, but a big moment for me, Marie, was half time. I just know with a group of Munster men, if I was walking into that tunnel at half time, you'd nearly be doing backflips, because you haven't fired a shot, you've done absolutely nothing, and you're going in there 6-6. You've really underperformed. You should be chomping at the bit to come out and show what you're about in the second half, and we never saw that.
So BJ, what now? Like, we were talking as well last week about how the gap was closing, that Munster had made up ground, that, you know, that these teams were evenly matched and that Munster might win a trophy. Is it back to square one now?
Yeah, we have to definitely look at that. You know, I think answering the earlier question, I was done is there. I think from a mental perspective, not so much, I suppose, in one part, Munster doubting. I think it lends to having that edge of confidence, you know, and it shows in their play. I think Ruby was mentioning there about which players would make the Leinster side. I don't think we have to look at it like that. I think how well and how synced they are playing together, knowing where each player needs to be. And then that takes face play, that takes pressure, and then obviously the territory game after that. So we need to look back at this. I think that mental edge is definitely there. And you know, that shows in how confident they are when they play, and that leads to their positive outcomes. You know, they're not hesitating, but they're not doubting. And within Munster, we're kind of leading onto those individual areas that doesn't allow us to kind of build that momentum and build that pressure. So we basically take a step back every time.
PJ, have you any idea what Luke McGrath did to Andy Farrell? He's keeping Jemison Gibson Park on the bench, and he looked the better number 9 on the pitch to me on Saturday.
Yeah, I know. He definitely likes to get the pack going. And look, I enjoy how he plays as well. And he's obviously played, you know, when he was with the Irish pack as well. So really gets that pack going. And look, it's always great when you're getting that go forward playing that clean ball at ruck time. Look, Munster did kind of disrupt them there now and then, but I just think their kind of efficiency getting over the game line just allowed the Nines just, you know, time on the ball and just to get that ball out as quick as possible, and then obviously snap when the chance was there.
PJ, one of the big areas of improvement, and mainly from the Saracens game, was the scrum. And we've seen Robin McBride come in there, and that certainly was a balance at the weekend. Not only did Leinster get two penalties from it, but they were also able to launch. And, you know, we haven't seen many teams using a scrum as a bit of a launch pad. It was certainly an area of dominance for them.
It was. And we know with playoff games, you know, set piece is paramount. And there were not going to be many opportunities at set piece. And they made those penalties count. You know, I think the one scrum was a real vital time. It was actually, you know, Munster scrum, and there was a turnover right then just outside the 22. And I just think they've got that platform, not only kind of obviously knowing each other, playing together at provincial level, but also at international level, you know, building that sequence up front. And it's time together. Which shows, and I think they're making, you know, good go forward momentum there.
PJ, we all know Stephen Kenny is under pressure, but is Johan van Graan under pressure too?
I think he's doing a job at Munster. You know, look at the kind of the team he's used through this season. I think they've played exceptional rugby at times. I think we need to look at the overall perspective of course Munster's measured on what they bring in the door. You know, silverware. I think they'll be hugely disappointed. There's no doubt, both in the Pro 14 and kind of in Europe, and we will see what happens now. You know, they're measured there. So I think from our perspective, I think they've used like 53-odd players. Now, even though that's a great stat, at the end of the day, you know, it's based on winning and losing. So, no, I don't think so. But I think he's got a good chunk of players there that need to definitely step up at the right time. And, you know, what needs to be done there is obviously in the camp, and they need to be aware of that and make sure, hopefully, it doesn't happen again.
And Donners, what about the job Leo Cullen is doing with Leinster? I mean, they're just relentless.
Yeah, to be fair, and he deserves credit for it, Ruby. He really does, and it actually annoys me a little bit. 100% Stuart Lancaster, Felipe Contepone, everyone that he's gone, Robin McBride, does an incredible job. But the drive, the want... I think that's where Leo is leading it out, and I think that's where you get results like Saturday. He sets the narrative for that whole team that, you know, they're the best in Ireland, and by being the best in Ireland, now can they push on and bring it on to Europe? All you have is a certain, you know better than anyone, span of time for your group. And they're being so selfish. They are grabbing all around him. And I don't think he's... to be fair, he does get enough credit, but I think sometimes it gets offloaded onto the brilliant coaching ticket that he's had the confidence to surround himself with. And to be fair, and BJ, you know better than anyone, we're hopefully heading into Rainbow Cup, and I don't think any team will benefit more from playing quality opposition than Leinster will, because, to be honest, there's a bit of a gulf between Pro 14 and what they play every week before what they're going to come up to against Toulon this weekend.
Yeah, there's no doubt within that. I think it's going to form a completely different format, and Leinster, I suppose, we'll see now, especially playing against South African team, the physicality, obviously, that they probably don't get it every weekend in the Pro 14, and obviously the size of the players running at you, kind of tackle technique, the kind of between the sapping tackles we saw, obviously, I think Munster went through something like double the amount of tackles Leinster did during the game, and that showed, even though not on the scoreline, I think that sapping really showed. So it's going to be definitely be a different ball game, and it's going to be great to see.
It's different now though, BJ. The lads are straight into Champions Cup action. Leinster taking on Toulon on Friday night. Munster taking on Toulouse on Saturday. Few injury doubts. Peter Romani came off. Johnny Sexton came off. This is going to be a step up for both teams now, isn't it?
There's no doubt about that. And I think both teams would say that they measure themselves in Europe. And look, that's where it counts, And I think obviously there'd be some serious injury worries there, especially with those big names you mentioned. But look, two French sides, Toulon and Toulouse, coming to Ireland, and I think that on the back of that, they don't want to think too far ahead. Two big sides with history in Europe. I would say at this stage, more dangerous side for me would be Toulouse. Toulon for me is not the Toulon of past, but Toulouse side is really dangerous in what they can bring and what they can really do in a game. So look, two big battles. I think both sides can definitely do that. But it's on the other side where it's going to be a tough trip back to France or back to the UK, whoever wins on that side.
There's no doubt Leinster bounced into training this morning, but what about the Munster players? How do you get them off the floor to go into battle on Saturday?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's a clean sheet approach, Take it that game by game. They'll probably take a few positives from the weekend, which they were, there's no doubt. Build that into the week. You need to take that momentum, that a small bit of momentum that you did into the week, and then close that off and then build towards playing against the French. There's no motivation, I think, needed in one sense with a French side like Toulouse coming to Thomond Park, and we know the guys will be up for it. It's just kind of knowing again now to kind of cut those errors, cut the turnovers. The turnovers were, I think, again, double the amount again from the weekend past. So that's all really bite us if we give ball away easy like that against a team like Toulouse. We can see what a guy like Chesney Colby can do. So look, it's going to be a tough battle, but I think they'll definitely take confidence in playing at home and be up for it.
BJ, I know we're really tight in time and it's wrong to probably ask this question now, but I know you're tight with CJ. You would have been a mentor and a brother for him. Just that decision with hanging up his boots, I'm sure he was chatting to you about all that.
Yeah, look, it's I think the Isle of Ireland, it was trending the day it came out. And look, yeah, we've been close. We've travelled a close road with Munster and, great friends off the field. So, look, yeah, decision's very personal. I think it's, stepped out and said, this is him. And look, he's had an unbelievable run. And you said he would have actually, played 150-odd games, 50-plus games for Ireland and the Lions and achieved, Rugby World Cup within that. So, yeah, look, you can only wish him well, and I kind of salute him on stepping out and making that decision for another cause. So, yeah, for my part, I'm not going to be seeing him in the red and there wasn't the green jersey again. I think that's most supporters, but I think everyone really has that common sense of we wish him all the best, and hopefully he'll come visit soon.
Absolutely. BJ, thanks so much for joining us. Leinster, deserving champions, they drive on, and let's see how they can go for the rest of the season. Quick break, and we're back chatting cycling and more Formula One with Declan Quigley.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Jenners, I know that BJ said he didn't feel that Johan was under pressure, that he's out there doing a job, and that's fair enough. But if the job is working out and you're not beating Leinster ever...
Yeah, look, it's one for me. I always feel the players have to take account, Marie. I 100% do. The easy thing is to look at a coach. But I would be very embarrassed if I was one of those players that Saturday. I really would be. A fundamental for Munster is to show where you're from and reflect what you're about. And I just didn't see it. And look, you can look at coaches and you can look everywhere else. But I would always look to the players to be selfish within their time.
Seems to be the topic of conversation this weekend, doesn't it?
It really does. Well, I know I said at the top of the show I didn't really have a highlight. Well, I kind of had one, and that was the Bahrain Grand Prix yesterday when Lewis Hamilton defied the odds to hold off Max Verstappen. It was absolutely breathtaking, really, I have to say. We were all off our seat watching it, and it sets it up nicely for a cracking 2021 season. Declan Quigley, journalist, is with us to talk us through it all. Declan, I don't know if you could have got a better opener than yesterday.
Cracking antidote to the depressing events of Saturday. I had a great weekend of sport because, you know, the weekend of two halves, wasn't it? Disastrous rugby match, disastrous soccer match, and then we had great get Bevel game with Sam Bennett giving a good old swing, and then the Bahrain Grand Prix. And I thought that was just an amazing race. Isn't it a weird thing that Lewis Hamilton, seven-time world champion, wins his 96th race, his fifth race at Bahrain. It's all so tedious, and yet it was absolutely perfect because he pinched that one. He snatched it from Red Bull. They've got a better car. They've got a fired-up young Dutchman in Max Verstappen, who's a real superstar, and it gets everybody excited. And the two of them went toe-to-toe. There was nothing weird about it. It wasn't like there was a flash of lightning or there was a snow on the track or, you know, a whole load of safety cars that confused things. This was one-on-one. Best two drivers, best two cars, and they went hammer and tongs right down to the last couple of corners of the race. It literally was only 7/10 at the end, and Hamilton, he won a race that Max Verstappen should have won, and I think Verstappen and Red Bull will be really irritated about it. But what it has done, given Mercedes, who have a bit of a car deficit for the first time in years, a little bit of a lead in the championship, so it's, like I say, it tees it up nicely for the rest of the year.
But it was incredible defensive driving for the last four laps, was it, or five laps, where Lewis was just in front of Verstappen, and it was pinpoint precision to every corner all the way to keep the faster car behind him.
Team effort, and Mercedes basically asked Lewis Hamilton, perhaps the all-time greatest racing driver in the history of the sport, they said, we're going to give you track position, i.e. with our strategy, we're going to put you in a position where you're going to be ahead of Max Verstappen. He's going to have a quicker car, he's going to have better tires, and they're not going to be as old and as used up, and we need you to try and hold that position. And he said, bring it on, give me track position and I'll hang on to it. And he did, and he had to extract the maximum from those tires, and that was it was guile, it was cunning, it was sensitivity, it was everything that, you know, he was bringing all those years. He's 36 now, and yet he still shows no signs of a diminish. You talk about, you know, you win nothing with kids, they say as well, Ruby, you don't go to war with an old samurai, and yet 36, he shows no signs of any diminishing intensity. He's just extraordinary.
It really does whet the appetite now for the rest of the season. I don't know if you heard us at the top of the show, but Dunica was really impressed with Sam Bennett's vomiting.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to know how difficult, I mean, the trouble with pro cyclists is they make it look easy. And you've got to remind yourself that it's 240, 250 kilometres. And Gent Wevelgem, I mean, he ticked a big box last Wednesday by winning Japan, his first World Tour one-day race victory. And that was a big one for Sam because he's been winning stage after stage and stage races. And they're big events, of course. They're very important. But to win a one-day classic was a big one. To win to get Gent Wevelgem, that would have been huge as well. And you had a situation where nine of the top one-day riders in the world were in that lead group, and he had no teammates. He was the best of the Coyne and Quickstep riders. The expectation would have been that one or two riders would have been trying to shepherd him and get him up into that group. Instead, he was the strongest of them, and he's the only one there, so he's a little bit vulnerable from that point of view. But to give you I mean, he had to get over the Kemmelberg, about 40 kilometres to go, the last climb, the last cobble climb of the day, and the the intensity of the effort and the fact that he hadn't got his feeding strategy right. He'd basically been eating too much, which is a bizarre thing. Usually they eat too little to get the hunger knock. He ate too much. He found himself throwing up from the intensity of the effort and the fact that he was just feeling a bit ill. And of course that meant that he hadn't got the sugars down, and then he got a hunger flat after that. But it was, I think it was an opportunity missed for Sam in actual fact, but also it's a lot of experience gained, and he knows he can go the distance. He knows too that he can get up over those big climbs with those riders. And I think he's got Scheldeprijs coming up on next Wednesday. It's not a World Tour race, it's a week one day classic. And after that, you know, I'd love to see him do Paris-Roubaix. I remember
Declan, we're going to have to talk about that again because we're out of time. And I have to say, I think it was probably the only time that most people can relate to an elite cyclist when you described him eating a little bit too much. I think that's probably it. Declan Quigley, thanks so much for joining us. That is all we have time for. We'll be back tomorrow with Mark Langdon on European football. We'll look ahead to that Republic of Ireland Bahrain game, and we'll also talk golf with Gary Murphy and a little bit of racing with Ruby. Tara Stewart is up next.